have the opportunity to preach. I appreciate the young folks, the junior and senior high that sit here on these front four or five benches at every service, the number of college students that we have that fill in the different sections, and the local folks that are here at every service. It's just an opportunity to be able to preach in a session like this tonight. I always try to quit on Sunday night somewhere around 20 minutes till 7, not later than that, and I promise to tonight. I noticed that the clock says 20 minutes till 12, so I promise that I'll quit by the time that clock gets to 20 minutes till 7. Someone said earlier that they knew that I had a face that would stop a clock, and I was the one that had been looking at it. This morning, we talked about how much we need God and how that without God, we would really be nothing. And yet with God, we're able to take what we are, though sometimes less than the best and less than what we might be, and accomplish a great deal. I want to build on that idea just a little bit tonight and think a little more in positive ways, of ways that we can do things to carry out God's will and to take advantage of the way that He will help us. On July the 27th, 1987, I stood here and preached, and that day met with the elders to talk with them about the possibility of moving here. That sermon that I used that Sunday morning, selecting one of my favorites, was a sermon that I entitled, Christians or Church Members. The gist of it was to show that there's a difference in just having your name on the roll and being an active Christian in the Lord's service. I chose as a text that day Ephesians chapter 4, verses 11 through 16, one of my favorite passages. It talks about how God has set different ones in different areas of work in the work of the church. Tonight I want us to think a little bit along that line, not of the same subject, but from the same passage and some related passages, about some ideas that can help us to really grow in a local sense and to really be the Lord's church and really do the Lord's work. The longer I'm here, the more I appreciate our elders. I believe that they are men with an attitude that's like it ought to be, and men that are looking for ways of leading us in the best way possible. In the last several weeks, the elders have been discussing, and they and I and Brian and others that are involved in the work, of ways that we can reach out and do more and involve more and really do more in the Lord's service. And I commend them for that, and I appreciate their attitude in doing that. Tonight, I want us to think about some things that can help us all to be thinking in that direction. Help us to be able to hold up their hands and support them as they present ideas to us and challenge us in the work in the local congregation here. I want to suggest four things tonight that we really need. I think we have developed these to a degree, as any congregation has. I think in some of these areas that we've developed them to a high degree. And yet there are ways that we can improve, there are other things that we can do, and things that we are looking to be able to do in the Lord's work. I want to suggest four things tonight that I believe are extremely important in the work of a local congregation, and suggest to you that these are backed up by the Scripture. In the first place, it is important for us to have organization. I have had a few elders in the past with whom I've worked who did not believe in any organization. I had one elder tell me one time, I think we ought to just let things go. We don't need to organize anything. The best work is just to let each one do what he wants to, when he wants to, and the least organization that we have, the best. Everybody's business is nobody's business, and when you go that route, you usually don't get very much done. The Bible emphasizes the need of organization. Now, I admit that it is possible for anything to be organized too much to the extent that a program becomes the end instead of a means to the end of doing the Lord's work. And we must always keep that in mind and be sure that we do not accomplish that. I also realize that there is much work which goes on in every area of work that is what we might call unorganized. Now, I purposely used unorganized instead of disorganized. Too many times there are things that are disorganized, and that's not good. But there's a lot of work that goes on that's unorganized in the sense that you and I as Christians are living for God every day of the week. And there may be visits that we make and good things that we do as we reach out to serve others that may not necessarily be involved in a certain program of the church, but it's a part of that work that we do on a daily basis, and God help us to do more and more of that. But having admitted to ourselves that we need to do that, we still come back to this need of being organized to see that the Lord's work is carried on as it should be. Go with me, if you have your Bible, back to Exodus, the 18th chapter. I think there is not a better passage in the entire Bible that talks about organization than this, and the organizational plan that's given here, which is a pretty good plan for management, might be even used in a management class, was given by someone who was not one of God's people. The plan was given by Moses' father-in-law, Jethro. He came to visit Moses, and if you're following along, pick up with me at about verse 13 of Exodus 18. It came to pass on the morrow that Moses set to judge the people, and the people stood by Moses from the morning unto the evening. And when Moses' father-in-law saw all that he did to the people, he said, "What is this thing that thou doest to the people? Why sittest thou thyself alone, and all the people stand by thee from morning unto even?" Moses said unto his father-in-law, "Because the people come unto me to inquire of God. When they have a matter, they come unto me, and I judge between one and another, and I do make them know the statutes of God and his laws." And Moses' father-in-law said unto him, "The thing that thou doest is not good." Now focus on the setting. Here's Moses, one of the greatest leaders that's ever lived, who has just brought perhaps 2.5 or 3 million people, at least over 600,000 men above 20, out of Egyptian bondage and across that great crossing of the Red Sea, and is leading them. And here's a man who's not even one of God's people. And he says to Moses, "This thing you're doing is not good." That suggests to us that sometimes we may learn, even from what's going on in the world, from those who may not be doing the right thing, but who have some principles that might be applied for us in doing the right thing. Jethro said, "Moses, this thing that you do is not good. Thou wilt surely wear away both thou and this people that is with thee. For this thing is too heavy for thee. Thou art not able to perform it thyself alone. Hearken now unto my voice. I will give thee counsel, and God shall be with thee." The man at least recognized God in the picture. "Be thou for the people to Godward, that thou mayest bring the causes unto God. And thou shalt teach them ordinances and laws, and shalt show them the way wherein they must walk, and the work that they must do. He said, a part of this organizational plan is you've got to teach people and instruct them what the needs are. And that's one of the things that's needed. I'm persuaded, and I really believe this, that most of my brethren will do what's right if they really understand the truth of the matter and if they've had the proper teaching and the proper instruction. There are exceptions to that, but I believe that principle is generally true. So he says part of this organizational plan is you be sure that all the people know the statutes of God and what they ought to do. Moreover, thou shalt provide out of all the people able men, such as fear God, men of truth, hating covetousness, and place such over them to be the rulers of thousands and the rulers of hundreds and the rulers of fifties and the rulers of tens. And let them judge the people at all seasons, and it shall be that every great matter they shall bring unto thee." The next few verses go on and explain that Moses listened to this advice, and this is exactly what he did. Look at Moses, one man trying to do all that was necessary for all these people. Jethro said, "This won't work. Won't work for you to try to do it all and just let things go along in a haphazard way. What you've got to do, Moses, is have organization. You need some people who can be leaders of thousands, and you need some who can be leaders even of tens." Came down to that number. But what you need to do is to organize in such a way that these people know what their responsibilities are, and they know where their leadership is and where it's to be done. And then you as their leader can lead all of them in the right direction, and you can be the man that can represent them between you and God and take the matters before God. But he said, "Moses, you need to organize, and you need to put people to work." Now, the New Testament bears that out in many, many places. There in Ephesians 4, for example, he gave some to be apostles. That was during the time when there were those who were apostles. He gave some to be pastors and teachers. That's the elders in the Lord's church and teachers in that sense. He gave some to be evangelists. And then he said after that all of this is for the purpose of doing the Lord's work. There is the organization of it. This is very important in the local congregation. And I commend our elders for having this attitude of organization to where there are different committees and different people. And will be additional people as there's opportunity and need put in specific places so that there can be the organization and we know what's going on. There are many of the areas of work here where someone will call the office or come by and say, I need such a need, such a thing today. I have this need. What do I do about it? All I have to do is pick up the phone and call somebody because there's organization and we know who's responsible for that. Or one of the secretaries can pick up the phone and call somebody who is involved in that phase of the work. That's the organization that's there. I have watched presidents of colleges. I've watched the presidents of the United States and governors and others. And some of the most successful people in leadership capacities have not necessarily been the most capable people as far as their own talents were concerned, except they excel in being able to put good people around them and use those good people in other ways. There is a man who served as a college president, not at Freed Hardeman, but at another college, whom I believe to be one of the most successful college presidents in his tenure that I've ever known. I'd like you to take your Bible. And as I look at his life and what happened, I'm convinced that the reason he was so successful is he realized, I don't know everything about it. I can't do everything by myself. I've got to have key men in key places and key women in key places who know what they're doing and will carry out their work. He had organization, and he was successful in his work. The Lord's work, folks, is a business. It's the greatest business in the world. We're in the insurance business. We're selling insurance against the greatest fire that will ever be. We're in the saving business. We're in the sales business. We're selling the gospel of Jesus Christ. And there is not a business in this land that is successful without the proper organization. There has to be. Number two, there must be the proper delegation. And for this, let's turn to the New Testament, and some of you have already guessed it, Acts, the 6th chapter. The early church had some of the same problems that congregations of the Lord's church have today. Their biggest problem here in Acts 6 is described by members murmuring and complaining. I suppose there's never been a church, a congregation without that. But there seems to have been some reason for this. There was a problem that in their work they were neglecting some of the widows. What was happening was that the apostles were somewhat like Moses back there in Exodus 18. They were so much involved as the leaders of the church here in Jerusalem and so much involved in the daily activities and daily details that they could not get everything done that needed to be done. And they came to themselves and said, this is not good. We need to spend more time with the Word and more time in prayer. Now, I do not buy the idea that's suggested by some that elders are spiritual leaders and the deacons are the leaders over physical matters. The elders of the church are leaders over everything. But I do buy the idea, and the reason I buy it is I believe it is scriptural, that although the elders are the leaders over every aspect of the Lord's work, that there are many areas of work that they need to delegate the details. And get someone who is capable of carrying out a responsibility in one specific area. And a person who may not be qualified to be an elder and be a leader over all of the areas of God's work may be eminently qualified and immensely qualified to be a leader in a specific area of work if he has some authority delegated to him and some assignment given in that area of work and some faith and trust placed in him and some push, if necessary, to get him to moving to carry out his responsibilities in that area. They said, let us select 7 men. I don't know what the significance of the word 7 is or the number 7, except that's how many they thought they needed on that occasion. And one thing that seems to be evident here is that they let the need that was present determine how many they selected to carry out that need. There may be one other significant fact then that the number 7 is usually used in the Bible to suggest completeness and may have that idea carried with it that here was a need and the leaders of the church at that time simply selected enough people to completely satisfy the need. And they called these men together and appointed them as was needed at that time and gave them their blessings and their encouragement and said, here is a job to be done. We want you to do it. That's delegation of authority. And there are many, many areas of work in the Lord's kingdom where that needs to be done. If our elders can get the deacons and the preachers and others accepting responsibilities, Bible class teachers, and just all of us for that matter, to where there's a job that needs to be done and there's somebody in the congregation that seems to fit that job and they call this person in, or persons as the case may be, and say, here's something we want you to do. We believe you are capable of doing it. Here are the guidelines that we give you. Now we want you to take this and go with it and see that the work is done, and come back and tell us about it. And if you have questions, or you have need, or you need us to meet with you to help you make a decision that's bigger than the decision that you ought to be able to make on a daily basis, come back to us. But basically, here's something that needs to be done. You take it, and you get the job done. That's delegation. And folks, the delegation of work in the local congregation is one of the keys to the success of it. Most of the works, most of the programs that we have involved here can be delegated to people. In some instances, it may need to be one individual who will accept the leadership of that. In other instances, it may need to be a group that will work together and pool their ideas to see that that job is done. They need to keep the elders informed. The elders need to be aware of what's going on so that they can be our leaders. You see, they have the responsibility to give an account for our souls. That's a great responsibility. But by the delegation of authority and the delegation of works, they'll have more time, like the apostles here, to put themselves to the Word of God and to prayer and to the concern of the spiritual welfare of all of us that are under their oversight. Delegation is a key. I think we've made a great deal of progress in this area. I really do. And I believe that there's more progress that we can make, and that we should make and look in that direction. Organization and delegation. Number three, the involvement of every member. We've shown what we can do with the involvement of all of us, especially in the raising of the funds for the bellow work. We've shown what we can do in other ways, the involvement of every member. Go back with me to that passage in Ephesians 4. Someone said that most preachers can take Ephesians 4 and preach out of it for a lifetime, and there's just about enough in Ephesians 4 to do that. Notice particularly there when you get down to verse 16. As already talked about in verse 11, some of the different areas of work, and verse 12, some of the specific purposes and needs. And then he gets down to verse 16, and he says, from whom the whole body, that's everybody, from whom the whole body fitly joined together and compacted. That's the unity. But then he goes on. According to the effectual working in the measure of every part. That's every member. Now there's the answer, the involvement of everyone. This is not easy. And particularly is it not easy in our local work here at Henderson. We have so many capable people. When we're here in a group like this with all the students that are here that are capable of being involved in so many different ways, all of those that are the older generation who in wisdom are so capable of being involved, it's not easy to involve everybody. And I admit to you that it's not an easy task. I think our elders understand that. You take on a given Sunday, just think about, for example, the leading of prayers. It doesn't take very many men to lead the prayers on a given Sunday. Don't you suppose in an audience like this, we probably have 300 or 400 that could lead the opening prayer, the closing prayer? It's not easy to involve everybody like we would like to. And I'm rather sure that we'll never reach the ultimate on that. But that's got to be one of our goals. And here is what I believe is the answer to bringing us as close to that goal as we possibly can is, for those who are in leadership capacities, the elders and then others who have delegated authority in different areas, always be looking to involve as many as possible. And every one of us as an individual be looking for ways to be involved. I've found out many times that I can get involved if I volunteer. In fact, sometimes I can get involved if I just ask a question about something. If I just ask somebody, what do you think about doing this? And they say, I think that's fine. You go ahead and do it. I never have had any trouble getting involved. It may be because I talk so much and ask so many questions. But you see, here is the answer to it. Every joint supplying, that means every member. Now, there are some of us that have some talents that others don't. Others have other talents that some of us don't. We're not all capable of the same things, and we're not all capable to the same degree. But if each one of us is looking for a way to be involved, if you don't like and we go to those that are involved in certain leadership capacities in certain programs, and we say, listen, I want to help. Can you use me? We won't solve all the problems. We'll still have some problems of getting everybody involved, but it'll help. It will help if we realize the importance of involvement. And those who are leading and making plans look for ways, and then all of us as members look for ways of getting involved and looking for an opportunity to use whatever our talents are. In the Lord's kingdom, organization, delegation, involvement, and number four, mutual encouragement. Mutual encouragement. Listen to the rest of that verse there in Ephesians 4:16. Measure of every part maketh increase of the body unto the edifying of itself in love. The edifying of itself, self-edification, where? From within the body. Over in Romans 14:19, another verse says about the same thing. He says, wherefore let us follow after the things that make for the peace, and the things wherewith one may edify another. Mutual encouragement. Now let me tell you one thing that every one of us can do. We can talk up the Lord's work. We can encourage those that are involved in other areas where we may not necessarily be involved. We can watch our complaining. And when there are things that need to be pointed out that need to be corrected, complain or talk at the right place. Talk to the people who can do something about it. And be careful about talking in negative terms. Look for the positive things and encourage those. Mutual encouragement, that's something that we can all do. I like that little story that I've told you before, but I remember Paul said, I told you before and I tell you again, so I guess if he could, I can too. Back in the Civil War, when the ones from the north were marching down the dirt road and the lady was on the front porch and she went and got her broom and went out and started hitting those soldiers, one of them said, don't you know you can't hurt them? She said, yes, but I can let them know whose side I'm on. Now that's one thing that we can do. We can let the world know whose side we're on. By encouraging those that are involved and those who lead. You know, it's easy for us to talk about some of the shortcomings of the elders and the deacons and the preachers and the Bible class teachers and others. How long has it been since you went to one of the elders and told them how much you appreciated what they're doing? Maybe even to the wife of one of the elders and told her how much you appreciate the support that she's giving. And let me tell you something, if there's anybody in this audience tonight that's more important than our elders, it's our elders' wives who stand by them and many times are at home by themselves when the elders are here or out doing something in the leadership of the Lord's work. How many times have you done that? Many times have you gone to one of our deacons and told him how much you appreciate what he's doing, to the Bible class teacher that teaches. We have some of the finest Bible class teachers here in this congregation that I've ever seen, and I've seen a few of them. We can do things like that. Mutual encouragement, talking it up.
That's what it's saying.
I believe that an audience like this can do as much or more talking about the Lord's work as any preacher can do in this pulpit preaching God's word. And I believe strongly in the power of preaching the gospel. Mutual encouragement. These are the four guidelines that I suggest for us. And I think that we are at a time in our work here where these can mean so much to us. We're making progress. We've seen so much progress. But we're sort of like the lady that said, I ain't what I can be, and I ain't what I'm going to be, but thank the Lord I ain't what I used to be. And I think that's where we are. I think we've made a great deal of progress in the work, and we have some challenges before us that can be some of the greatest days in the history of this congregation. And if we'll go back and start with the principle of the morning lesson, but God makes the difference. And then take what we are and what we have and organize, delegate, and involve, and mutually encourage, we'll see that we can do even more than we thought we can do in the Lord's work in a local situation. Folks, it's great to be a Christian. It's great to be a part of the Lord's church. It's great from the standpoint that we can look forward to going to heaven, but I believe even if that were not in the picture, if we could just look at it from the standpoint of what we're able to do with one another and what it means to work together, It'd be great even to do that. Let's organize in every way that we can. Let's delegate. Let's put people to work. Let's involve. And above everything, let's mutually encourage and pray for one another in the Lord's service. And we can do the Lord's work. Talking about this mutually encouraging one another, I tell you something that's an encouragement to those of us that are Christians is to see others become Christians. And so if you're not a Christian, tonight if you would come and be baptized into Christ as a penitent believer, not only would you be putting yourself in the right relationship with Christ and your soul on its way to heaven, but you would be an encouragement to those of us who are already Christians. Another thing that's an encouragement is to see someone who's gone astray. Come back and say, I've been wrong. I need to get back in the Lord's work and do what He wants me to do. In doing that, you'll get your soul in the right relationship with God, but you'll also be an encouragement to others. So as you think about the invitation that's extended to you tonight, think of it in terms of the lessons that we presented today. God needs you. You need God. And you can be an encouragement. You can be mutually encouraging one another by being an active, faithful Christian in the Lord's service. If you need to respond to the Lord's invitation, won't you come as together we stand and sing.